This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Afternoon, everybody. It's the Hockey News Podcast. It's Matt Larkin here with Ken Campbell, Ryan Kennedy. Only 1 week or so left in the regular season. We're really getting down to the nitty-gritty. And yet, when you look at the Atlantic Division standings, it seems like nothing is resolved in that Eastern Conference wildcard race. It seems like it's really tough to figure out who's going to be the odd team out there between the Boston Bruins, Toronto Maple Leafs, Ottawa Senators, Tampa Bay Lightning. They're all playing so well, but somebody's going to have to lose. Somebody's going to have to drop out of that race. So I'm wondering, guys, who do you think is going to be the odd man out of that group?
I'd have to say Tampa Bay. And I'd have to say, da-na-na-na, na-na-na-na, it's over. How's that?
No.
Okay. Let's start again, though.
No way. We're going to let Ken ride.
No, you wear that. Come on.
Ken's going to have to eat this one. No. His joke bombed, and it's staying on the podcast.
Okay. Anyways.
So
I say Tampa Bay.
So why?
Yes. I say Tampa Bay. Well, because I think they've just run out of runway. They've got, four games left. They're at 88 points. So the most they could get is 96. You know, I mean, Boston's got 92. Toronto and Ottawa both have 91. And Ottawa faces Detroit back-to-back. I mean, if they can take both those games, I think they're sitting pretty as it is. So I'd have to say Tampa Bay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like Tampa Bay is the most likely scenario. My worry with Ottawa is that their blue line is just completely devastated right now. With CeCe and Method going out, and Carlson already going through bumps and whatnot. You're looking at a blue line where, like, Ben Harper is in the lineup, Jyrki Jokipaka. It's a big triage unit, and it seems good that they're playing Detroit back-to-back, but what happens if a Red Wings team with nothing to lose and the Joe closing, what if they decide that, we're just going to ruin Ottawa's season? And, I mean, you know, Detroit played Toronto very tough on the weekend. And for me, if Ottawa doesn't win both those games, then all of a sudden you hear those footsteps. You know, Tampa's got some games against those teams, and so does, like, Boston plays Ottawa as well. And you sort of wonder, like, do they choke because they're really banged up? And, you know, Tampa, they do have a lot of really good players despite the injuries. It's going to be tight. And, I mean, Toronto's got a tough schedule, too. We'll see what they can do against Buffalo.
Wow, they're doing it. You know, I mean, Tampa's got some good players, but they're also hurting, too. I mean, you know, they're doing it with Yannick Gourde and Adam Ernie.
Yeah, who is this Yannick Gourde guy? He's unbelievable.
I want to say he played for Victoria, though.
He's actually a really good player, but, I mean, you know, you get the point, right? So
he's not Steven Stamkos.
No, he's not. And I just think that, you know, they've made their season already. I mean, I mean, with the injuries they had and the adversity they faced, I don't think anybody expected them to even be here where they are right now. And just the fact that they've made it this far and they're still hanging in with the big guys and still winning games, I think is kind of a triumph for them. And then they just kind of go back next year and they know they're a good team. Mm-hmm. They'll have Stamkos back. And they'll sort of just kind of hit the reset button, I would think.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to play devil's advocate here. Maybe because of my pride, I still stubbornly think Tampa Bay is going to get in the playoffs. I mean, we picked them to win the Stanley Cup, so I want this to be true. And I've been calling them as the comeback team for the past couple months. And, you know, Tampa Bay, they do have a chance to control their own destiny. They still have the Leafs on the schedule. They still have Boston on the schedule. If they win both those games, they're winnable games, the way Tampa Bay's playing right now, I think it's still possible. And it's a vote of non-confidence for me against Ottawa. I know Detroit's kind of a mini-vacation for two games, but it's not a mini-vacation for a guy like Ben Harper. He's not used to facing competition at that level, NHL competition, that often. So I think the choke narrative is very possible for Ottawa. They've lost 8 of 10. And they're just not the same team without Erik Karlsson. I think it's very, very established by now.
But you know what? I think I've watched Ottawa play a lot this year, and they play a really, really patient game. Like, they play probably the most patient game in the NHL. Mm-hmm. And they just wait and wait and wait. And even if they're down a goal, like, they're the only team in the league that sits on a one-goal deficit, as far as I can see. But they'll just keep waiting. And they'll just wait until their opportunity to strike. And it's going to happen a couple of times a game. And they've still got Kyle Turris. And they've still got Hoffman. And Stone is back. And I think they've got some guys there who can get them one or two goals a game that they need, and then they just kind of shut it down. Like, they play such a passive, you know, such a passive game sometimes, and really patient. I just think that, you know, it's hard to lose a lot when you play that way, and I just think they're going to be able to probably pull a couple of these out, and that's all it's going to take.
But all the names you rhymed off there, those are forwards, so who's getting them the puck? No Cody Ceci, no Erik Karlsson.
Yeah.
To me, that's the problem, right? I think the flow of their game, it's so controlled by Karlsson, I just don't know if we can even describe Ottawa as the same team right now.
He's missed a couple games, a couple losses.
And it looks like he's not coming back for the next game, as far as I know. And Cody Ceci's out for the rest of the regular season, I'm pretty sure.
Right, and if Karlsson's out, they're hooped. I mean, they're hooped if he's out for the rest of the next five games. I mean, because everything starts with him. I mean, he just kind of just says, okay, here's the pace the game's going to be played, and here's how it's going to be played, and I'm dictating it, and away we go. And they're not a good team without him. They're not a great team with him, but they're not a good team without him.
Yeah, and that structure you talked about, it's hard to maintain that structure when your top defenseman, your second best defenseman, and your fourth defenseman are all out of the lineup.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. If you look at the standings right now, I mean, it's hard to see. Number two and number three in the overall NHL standings, or at least tied for third. You've got Pittsburgh and Columbus, and if the playoffs started today under the current format, they're playing each other. So I'm curious, are you guys in the camp that you hate the format, or is that kind of just, it's convenient right now, and the minute we see, oh, Toronto-Ottawa in the first round, some cool-looking matchups, well, people immediately forget that and think, oh, this is so great, oh, Edmonton-Calgary in the first round, it's so exciting, the rivalry. So where do you fall in that debate?
I hate it. I mean, Pittsburgh and Columbus is going to be out after the first round of the playoffs. And then Pittsburgh and Columbus might be out of the second round of the playoffs. No, I don't like it at all. I think 1-8 would be a much better way to do it. Be much more equitable. I mean, you see the rivalries enough in the regular season. They play each other a lot in their own division. There's, you know, really heated battles going on for playoff spots. And, you know, they all hate each other. And we know how much the NHL loves that people hate each other because that's what they like. So you know, we can get that out of the way in the regular season, but in the playoffs with so much at stake, you know, I mean, come on, seriously, like a 2-3 team, and then I mean, it's incentivized the New York Rangers to just kind of sit there and play crappy for as long as they need to, because they're entrenched in the seventh spot. They get to play a team in the first that's going to finish first in the Atlantic. And they're going to be the better team. They're going to have more points, right? So not only does it kind of incentivize the Rangers to sit where they are, it in a way incentivizes teams at the top of the Atlantic to go, maybe I'm not so bad with finishing second or third in the Atlantic, because if I finish first, I'm playing a team that's better than us. Yeah. So yeah, no, I don't like it at all.
Yeah, I mean, I'll play devil's advocate here for a second and say, if you're trying to win the Stanley Cup, you know you're going to have to go through the best teams, and you should want to play the best teams in order to be prepared for those final series. So whether you face Pittsburgh or Columbus in the first round or the second, or even the third for that matter, you're still going to have to go through them at some point. And I recognize that when your season's over and you lost in the first round, it seems a lot worse than if you went out in the conference final.
Tell the owner that.
Yeah, from a business standpoint, if you're Columbus,
he has three home dates in the first round, and he could have had like eight home dates.
Right. Yeah. Especially for a team like Columbus. Like, we need the gate revenues. Come on.
We paid for all this cannon powder.
Oh, wow. Holy smokes. Wait a second. If we're gonna say my joke,
no, don't draw attention to the Hammer joke
worse.
Again. No, it wasn't.
That
it wasn't.
Worse.
No, because people laughed.
Oh, we live with the cannon powder. Yeah. We have a cannon in our ring. Yeah. Oh yeah, wow. Oh, that's so funny. True story, bro.
True story, bro. All right. Some people have floated
in the bar, man.
Some people have floated the idea of the 16 team bracket where you got 1 versus 16. Actually, it was my father-in-law, I think, who came up with the idea first.
I kind of shot it down.
And I was like, listen, Donnie, you know, if you got San Jose playing Boston or whatever, you know, that's not the actual matchup. I know, just hypothetically, in round one, I think it would be a travel nightmare for the league.
Yeah.
If you have too many East West and you've got all throughout the playoffs, I think it's too much.
Yeah, I mean that, but I mean from an entertainment standpoint, that would be awesome.
That would be fun.
I mean, I think that would be great because how many times are you going to see Boston and San Jose playing a playoff series?
Mm-hmm.
Unless they're both in the Stanley Cup, you're never going to see it. So
yeah.
I think it would be fantastic. And I mean, you know what? When the Leafs were in the Smythe Division, what?
North.
No, well, when they played in the Western Conference, they were going to L.A. and San Jose and all the time.
Yeah.
And in 92 and 93, it didn't seem to really hurt them too much. They went to the conference final both years.
Well, they got eliminated 2 years in a row by the Western team.
Yes, they did.
LA and Vancouver.
Mm. Yes.
Could that be why? Oh, they beat San Jose, so there you go.
No, it was because they weren't as good as those
teams. Okay. Yeah, that's a good response.
That's part of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyways, but I think it would be great to have a 1-16, but I agree. I mean, from a logistical standpoint, it might be a bit of a nightmare, but you'd have to think that maybe it would all even out at some point. And I don't know. I think it would be a terrific thing. I think it would be really intriguing. And also, it would reward a team for finishing first, which is what it's supposed to do. I mean, the Washington Capitals would be playing
Boston, Ottawa. Washington, Ottawa, that's
round.
Fair.
Well, yeah, that's who they're probably going to be playing anyways, right? So,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean,
just somewhere.
But, I mean, I think it would be great, but I don't think the league would ever go for it. I think from a more practical standpoint, mm-hmm. you got to look at a 1-8 and say, you know, that would be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would. I mean, we have this conversation every couple of years, basically, and you know, the playoff format changes. We get restless after a couple of years and say, this isn't working. Let's do something else.
Yeah, but okay.
I think 1-8 is probably the one that nobody could complain about.
But this is a league that you know, uses video replay to see if a guy's freaking DNA was over the blue line on an offside on a goal that was 30 seconds after the play. You know, okay, so we're trying to get it right. We're trying to get it right. We're trying to do this right. You know, so do it right. Get it right. Don't have the second and third best team in the league being knocked out in the after the first round. That's not right, and that's not getting it right.
Mm-hmm. I think it could. I mean, if we see that happen, which I guess we're going to, no matter what, I wouldn't be surprised if they reevaluated it this summer, as soon as this summer. I could see it happening.
I don't know that there's, like, I'm not getting any indication that there's any appetite for change on this one, so I'd be surprised if they did that, but you never know. I mean, maybe the owners of the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Columbus Blue Jackets scream loud enough that they look at it, but I think it's pretty well set as it is, I think.
Yeah.
It's interesting. A couple weeks ago, we were talking on this podcast, it feels like forever ago now, about Brad Marchand and whether he was a Hart Trophy candidate. He'd actually taken over the goal-scoring lead and the points lead in the league. And now, 2 weeks later, Connor McDavid has just blown away the field. Oilers are rising up, and they're threatening to win that Pacific Division. Do you think now is the time where we do say he has surpassed Sidney Crosby as the best player in the world? What do you think?
I think you can have that conversation. I'm not sure you can say it unequivocally, but you can definitely have that conversation without a doubt. You know, I mean, because they were talking about this on the Oilers broadcast the other night, and they kind of were going through the same thing, and they were saying, okay, you know, I mean, okay, so if you can only pick one player to start your franchise with, I mean, everybody would pick Connor.
Yeah. And are they supposed to be the same age for the sake of argument? Or is it like...
No. You got one guy, you're Las Vegas, and you can have the pick of anybody in the NHL. You pick Connor McDavid.
Yeah.
If you're going into game 7 of a series, you know, are you going to pick Connor McDavid? Or are you going to pick Sidney Crosby? So there might be a bit of a, you know, tug back and forth there, but I think you can have the conversation. I think you can make the point that he is the best player and not look out of place
and not a hot take anymore.
Yeah, no. And I think it's just, you know, obviously it's if it's not true right now, it's just a matter of time.
Yeah, I would say as soon as next year, we can almost unequivocally say McDavid is the best player in the NHL. If you just look at how many hard games Crosby has played over his career, you think about how players age. And, I mean, Crosby is a generational player. He's going to have a peak longer than most players. But McDavid is just entering his peak. And, you know, what we've learned about young players now, that they're actually entering their peak earlier than we once suspected. So you're going to get peak McDavid next season. You're going to get Crosby slightly diminished. And I think that'll be enough to say, yeah, McDavid's the guy. I mean, if you look what Patrick Maroon has done this season on McDavid's wing, it's pretty incredible. Yeah, if you look at where the Oilers are as a team, essentially it's McDavid pulling up all boats with an assist to Cam Talbot having a very strong year in net.
Without those two guys, they might be a lottery team.
Yeah, they're the same old Oilers.
And the two things I want to see from Connor McDavid before I unequivocally say this guy's the best player in the world, I want to see him be more selfish and score more goals, and I want to see him better in the dot. And those are the two areas that Sidney Crosby was found wanting in his first couple of years, too. Mm-hmm. And then he decided to go out and be the best player in the world and be really good at all of those things. And now this year there's a good chance he'll win the Roger Richard Trophy, and he's great on the dot. So I think those are the two areas of the game where I think he needs to step it up just a little bit more, probably a lot more in the dot, actually. But but when he does that, then it's going to be like, okay, this guy is head and shoulders above everybody else.
Yeah, and it's funny because Crosby did spend a summer specifically getting better at faceoffs early in his NHL career. And like you said, he decided that he wanted to do it. He did it because he had all those skills and he had the hockey sense to do it. And for me, I always like to, when we're doing player comparisons, I always like to say, okay, if Sidney Crosby's got the puck, can Connor McDavid stop him? If Connor McDavid's got the puck, can Sidney Crosby stop him? If you ask that question right now, I think Crosby still has a bit of an edge.
I think Crosby's going to shut him down. If they're on like a fantasy,
after the playoffs, pond hockey, one on one.
Sidney Crosby, pretty fantastic defensive. But if you ask me the question next year, I'd probably say, like, well, I don't know if Crosby can stop McDavid anymore. And I think McDavid probably has the speed and the hockey sense to shut Crosby down. It's we're at a crossroads here. The transition is happening
and we're gonna find out a lot more in the next month or so about all of this. I think if McDavid continues to elevate this team and they, you know, win a round or two, which is entirely possible.
Yeah.
And then say Columbus does beat Pittsburgh in the first round, then everybody's going to be like, oh my God.
I think you might see it. You might see him overtake Crosby when it comes to the award voting this year, because as you guys were explaining, the role in Edmonton, the influence on the team, I think you could make the case McDavid is the most valuable player to his team. If we're voting today, it's McDavid, right?
Absolutely.
But if they're playing this magical game of one-on-one pond hockey at midnight, I don't know why it's at midnight, I think that Crosby finds a way to shut down McDavid. I think he's still slightly more well-rounded and just has that
tiny Lego. They have the cars. Like,
yeah, the cars will be shining the lights. And,
yeah.
Or it's in a cornfield and there's ghosts.
Boy, that's another bad one. And that's two to one for him in bad ones to me.
Apparently, I'm buying what Ryan's
like
selling
to.
And Art Ross is like, way to go, kid.
Oh, my God.
I think today's a comedy low.
I've seen that. You've seen Goon 2, eh?
Yep. Went to the premiere.
Yeah, what have you...
I haven't seen Goon 2 yet.
I really liked it.
It was very good.
I thought the story was much richer this time. It was a much better story this time around than the last time.
Yeah, and they certainly, because you knew most of the main characters, they had a chance to flesh out guys where, like, I thought the coach was a lot funnier in the second one.
I thought
some of the secondary guys, like the goalie jousting with the two Russian-Ukrainian guys, that was great. There was a lot of really nice inside jokes, like the guy from Letterkenny.
The Letterkenny guys.
Who was essentially
Ilya
Bryzgalov, I think they had a lot more freedom because they had already established that world.
Right.
Now back to our regular scheduled podcast.
All right. I've wanted to ask, though, is Tyler Seguin good in it? Like doing
his
bro
thing?
Oh,
he's only in it for like 10 seconds.
Oh, literally.
Steve Delzato they're in a scrum behind the net.
Yeah.
And then the goon guy picks up the water bottle and drinks it, and they go crazy, and then he scores. Somebody scores. And that's it. And then, like, Brandon Press is in it for a little while. George Parros is in it a couple of times.
And Colton Orr.
That's good. Yeah. I guess they all found work. That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it was... It wasn't bad. I really quite liked it, actually. I quite liked the story, and I thought it was a pretty endearing little yarn.
All right. I'm going to check it out. Yeah. It's good to know. Time to move on to some reader questions. We're going to start with Eric Veldhaus. I can't not say his name with that accent. I just have to. I'm sorry, Eric. Eric Veldhaus. He says, thoughts on the review for the Alex Ovechkin hit. I can clarify one thing off the bat. The word review, when it's used in the context of Twitter for certain questionable plays, like when the league says it's reviewing something, it doesn't mean it's evaluating it seriously. It means that it's reviewing it because they just review every single hit. Like they pause and watch every single hit that happens. Doesn't mean there's a hearing. And in this situation, the Ovechkin hit, there's nothing really to see there. He maybe left his feet ever so slightly, but pretty late. There's no head contact. There's not going to be any supplemental discipline for this one. There's nothing to see there.
And nor should there be. Nor should there be. It was a routine hit along the boards. I mean, I've seen Alex Ovechkin tattoo a lot of guys way worse than that.
Brian Campbell.
Yarmir Yager for one of them. This was just a... You know, a hit that had a bad result, and it's too bad. But I mean, if you're going to have contact in the game, this stuff's going to happen occasionally.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Next one, Peter Pietrangelo. Good name. I feel like I could see that on a real estate sign. Peter Pietrangelo says, assuming not Ken Holland and Jeff Blashill, who is out there and can turn around the Red Wings?
In terms of players?
In terms of turning around the franchise. So GM and coach. So the question assumes
that they're gone. Oh, it assumes they're gone. Oh, I was assuming you were saying they're not going to be gone.
Yeah, it says assuming not them.
Neither of them is gone.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
It's not even worth talking about because they're not going anywhere. Like, I mean, what do people want from Ken Holland?
Yeah, 25
like, what
years?
Do you want? Like, what do you want? I mean, it was going to happen sooner or later, and yes, he has signed some horrendous contracts. Yeah. Justin Abdelkader, bad contract. Danny DeKeyser, bad contract. There's a couple of bad contracts in there. You show me a GM in the league who doesn't have some skeletons in his closet, and I'll show you a GM who doesn't exist. Mm. So, I mean, I kind of think Ken Holland's earned the right to try and turn the ship around. You know, and he made it very clear to me when I talked to him last week that there is no appetite for, you know,
like a tear down?
Yeah, a tear down, you know, down to the wood and rebuilding and everything like that. And he makes a pretty good point, too, because, I mean, if it was just a matter of being lousy all the time, like for a bunch of years, why isn't Arizona better? You know, why did it take Columbus 15 years to put
together?
Yeah,
it doesn't work for every team.
You know, it doesn't work for every team, and it only works when you get a generational talent that comes along, and you don't even know if you're going to get them. You know, I mean, where would Washington be if they hadn't gotten Ovechkin? We know where Toronto would be without Matthews. We know where Edmonton would be without Connor McDavid. So I think that, and Jeff Blashill is a good young coach. He was the youngest coach in the league when he was hired. He was 42 years old. He's like 45 now. He's a good coach. I don't think that that's going to happen. I think what they have to do is they have to figure out what they're going to do with some of these guys that they have on these long-term deals. Whether they're going to, you know, hope, you know, maybe they can lose one of them to Vegas and free up some cap space. And then you've got to be bringing in the Bertuzzis and some of these younger guys and giving them more roles and seeing what they can do. And there's going to be some, you know, like Mike Babcock said in Toronto, there's going to be some pain there for a while. There's just going to.
Yeah. I almost feel like the way to do it is they need to establish Robida Island slightly south.
Right.
You know, and like Evgeny Svechnikov, he's slated to make his NHL debut tonight. That's a great sign. You got Anthony Mantha already
Nozak
rolling.
Nozak scored the other night for them. He came in and played. And
you know, Xavier Roulette.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So you're getting these young guys. They're starting to seep in. The Red Wings will have a decent first-round pick. You know, it's going to be somewhere. Well, actually, no.
They're going to have seven, probably.
Yeah, they're going to have a top 10.
They're probably going to be seven. Unless they win the lottery, in which case they'll be, what, three? What do you
mean? Yeah, one, two,
three. Well, they could be one.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
No,
they could win the lottery
straight.
Yeah,
they're still
in
the lottery.
So, they could get...
They're probably going to be seven, though.
They get three shots at that lottery,
they could get Nico Hischier, or they could get the first defenseman off the board. It might be Cale Makar or Miro Heiskanen, both of whom would be perfect Red Wings because they're mobile puck movers. They're not, you know, they're not a team that's going to be blinded by a lack of size there. So I think, you know, they have the beginnings. You know, Dylan Larkin, he could be a number one center. He's got great speed. You know, he's a two-way kid. But what they need to do, like you said, someone's got to go to Vegas, and then, you know, they need Roby Island to come to Detroit and figure out what to do with a couple of those other guys so that they can make it work for these youngsters.
And the Red Wings have 11 picks this year, 9 picks next year, 20 picks in the next 2 years. And I think it's pretty safe to say there's no team in the NHL that has mined more out of its middle and lower round picks than the Detroit Red Wings have over the years. And, I mean, they've got, you know, Hagen Anderson's a great European scout, seems to find these guys in Europe that nobody else seems to be able to identify when they're 18 years old, and then they come over here when they're 22, and they're excellent. So, you know, I think those guys have earned the opportunity to try and dig themselves out of this. If this is, you know, if we're still having this conversation in 2 years, then it's probably time to change. But I don't think that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. I mean, those are all fair points about Holland. And I think, I mean, he's never gotten a chance to do the restart. So he deserves, obviously, he's got 25 years. He's worked up a lot of leash. The only thing I'm worried about if I'm a Red Wings fan is I don't know if I want to hear my general manager saying things that sound a bit like denial. And I'm sure we got to give him the benefit of the doubt, and hopefully he doesn't mean just keep signing veterans, keep pushing, we're not going to give up.
Yeah, I don't think that's
But it's still a little... Like, I mean, if I'm a Red Wings fan, and I want to hear my GM say, no, we've got to start over, we know we've got a lot of work ahead of us, we got to blow this thing up. Like, that's what I want to hear if I'm a fan.
But blow it up. I mean, what entails blowing it up, right?
Yeah. Well, I think
trading veterans, buying guys out.
Well, trading veterans. Who are you going to trade? I mean, Henrik Zetterberg's your best player. So you're trading him? No, probably not. I mean,
but if you could, I don't think you could get much for Zetterberg at this point, given his age. That's the problem with Detroit right now, is that they don't have tradable assets.
Right, exactly. And the other guys that you would theoretically like to trade are not very tradable because people don't like their contracts and they don't like the players.
Yeah, but even guys like Nicholas Cronwall are just getting too old.
So that's a fair point. So what are you blowing up, right? Like, you have to have something to blow up blow it up. And they don't really, they're not really in a position where they can just say, oh, yeah, we're wiping the slate clean here and all these guys are going to get run over by a bus this summer. Like, it's just, you know, it's not going to happen. It's not like these things always sound a lot better than they sometimes are. And like in fantasy hockey, it's like, trade this guy, trade that guy. Well, it doesn't really work that way in the NHL, you know?
But on the other hand, the Leafs found a taker for Dion Phaneuf. They found a taker for Phil Kessel's contract. They did take it down to the wood. They managed to make
David Clarkson.
They traded David Clarkson.
Anything is possible.
So it can be done. It's just a matter of, do you have the stomach to, you know, cast away these lifelong Red Wings who have meant so much in a previous generation? That's the big challenge in Detroit, is you essentially have guys that, you know, not Zetterberg. Zetterberg still obviously has some use to him.
I think Zetterberg,
but you've got some useless players on that lineup that are locked in.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the big challenge, is you saying you can't blow it up, it's not a good thing.
Yeah.
It's the Los Angeles problem right now, where it's like, who would take Dustin Brown's contract?
Right.
That's the problem in Detroit right now.
Yeah.
So what do? Do you go to Vegas and say, we'll give you X to take this guy, you know?
Yeah, I think that's a step, and maybe you go back to Arizona and say, hey, you might remember us from such deals as Pavel Datsyuk. What can we do here?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah, you do what you have to do, and, you know, I don't know what their buyout situation is right now, but you make some really tough decisions in order to free up space so that you can play younger guys and bring in some younger players that can help you in the future.
Mm-hmm. Good. Jonathan Middlestead says, still think NHL Jets in 2018-19. He's referring to Future Watch. A couple years ago, we picked the Jets to win the Stanley Cup in 2019. So, what do you guys think?
Hot take. That's what was, a hot take.
Do you think they're going to... I mean, I don't think they're going to win the Cup in 2019, so let's put that aside. But do you think they're going to be back and better next year?
Back and better next year?
Yeah, are they going to recover? Are they going to, or improve, maybe, is the word I'm looking for.
Well, I don't know, because I thought when they made the playoffs 2 years ago, that was the launching pad. And they were in for bigger and better things, but, you know, I mean, they've got to get their goaltending in place.
Mm-hmm.
They've got to get that goaltending in place, and they just have to play with a little more consistency. Like, this is a team that I get the sense, and I don't know why, but I just get the sense that this is a team that they win a couple of games and they feel pretty damn good about themselves, you know, and they think they're the cock of the walk and all this stuff, and then they end up playing terrible for like 8 to 10 games, and that's kind of a coaching issue too.
I was just going to say,
I don't want to say it too loud because I like Paul Maurice, and I think he's a really good guy and he's smart.
But he's missed the playoffs like 75% of his career seasons.
Yeah.
He's not exactly immersed in the culture of winning, I'm sorry to say.
Players love him. The media loves him. It's funny. I was talking to Sammy Kapanen not too long ago, and he said that the best coach he ever had was Paul Maurice. And, you know, Sammy Kapanen, he's been doing some coaching over in Finland now. He says, I am modeling myself as a coach after Paul Maurice. Maybe that'll work for Kalpa. I hope it does. But, what has Paul Maurice done lately? I think it's a big problem. And when it comes to goaltending, I have not given up on Connor Hellebuyck. What we're seeing right now is a goaltender that probably shouldn't have been in this position right now. He's still a young guy. The fact that Andrei Pavlik was so inconsistent in Winnipeg really thrust Hellebuyck, and to a lesser extent Michael Hutchinson, into the spotlight. I think if Hellebuyck can have a solid season next year, then all of a sudden, when you're looking at 2019, if Hellebuyck's a pretty decent goaltender, then all of a sudden it's like, okay, well, we got that. We got Patrick Laine in his prime. Mark Scheifele in his prime.
God, they've drafted well.
Oh, right? Kyle Connor coming up. Jack Roslovic coming up. Jack Roslovic has turned into a fantastic two-way prospect, and they're bringing him up to see what he can do
for
the rest of the year. Nikolai Ehlers is going to be in his prime. It's hard to know what the defense is going to look like with, you know, Byfuglien versus, you know, where is Toby Enstrom at that point, but I mean, they've got a lot of really good elements. It just seems like they need to put it together, and maybe Paul Maurice isn't the guy to do that. Maybe it's Travis Green, maybe it's Todd Reardon, who is currently with Washington. There's going to be options out there, and as we've seen in the recent past, you can win a Stanley Cup after firing your coach in the middle of the season. It can certainly be done.
It can happen, right? And it's interesting with the Jets, and I kind of had this thought come to me when we were preparing our draft previews coming out next month, and I was looking at the Jets' long-term needs, and I said, man, they've got everything on paper in the long term because they've drafted so well. They've got the best farm system in the NHL. So to me, what needs to happen is Kevin Cheveldayoff, he's not an overly aggressive GM. He made the one big Kane trade, but he's known commonly for being pretty conservative. Mm. Now is the time to get aggressive. You've got enough assets. You've got a lot of young guys. I think it's time. They got Logan Stanley last year in the draft. You've got enough first-round picks, enough prospects. So if I'm Cheveldayoff, I say, okay, I'm going to start aggressively shopping maybe some prospects or at least my future picks. We don't need any more. And I think you don't want to waste, especially Dustin Byfuglien's prime, it's nearing its close. Tylan Myers is starting to get a little bit older. And Scheifele's in his prime. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Injury risk. So to me, I don't think there's any team whose GM should be under more pressure this offseason than Kevin Cheveldayoff to make some aggressive
drafts. What you're saying is draft day should be a big day for him. Not in terms of the draft, but in terms of making
some trades.
Blockbuster trade.
We're getting close to the end of the podcast, and you know what it's time for? The greatest game ever invented. Was he a Ranger?
Was he a Ranger?
I'll kick it off. I got the guy fresh on the tip of my tongue.
All right.
Oh, this is a risky one. This could be an embarrassment, but I'm going for it.
All right.
I may have given it away. Damn it. P.A. Parenteau.
Yep.
Oh yeah, he was right.
Shit.
Wow.
Shit.
Are you serious?
Come on, man.
But it's because
I was doing some
research and I couldn't. I had no memory. I was like, man, P.A. Parenteau.
Come on.
He wasn't a Ranger. Being arrogant, I was like, well, if I didn't know, then nobody knew.
Oh no!
But
he's
no,
played problem. For
that was
all three.
Not the worst one I've ever done.
The worst one of all time, probably.
Well, you oversold.
Ken Reggett
or somebody.
Yeah,
yeah.
I'm in a slump. I'm officially in a slump.
It's a tough game. Yeah,
it's not that tough. It's not that tough.
It's right, it's easy to learn. Tough to manage.
Tough to stay on top. It's tough to stay the king.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Go.
Okay. This one might have a bit of a trick to it. Emerson Eatem, was he ever a New York Ranger?
I think you gave it away. Did he ever get in the lineup?
Yeah, did he? I know he was.
I think
he belonged to them. He definitely belonged to them.
Carl Hagelin.
Whether
trade,
or not he played for
did
them,
did he get in the lineup?
I'm gonna say yes. He
I'm
must
gonna
have
say
played
he played
game.
Like a game.
Yeah.
Because if they traded Hagelin to get him just on pure pride, like, well, we gotta play him.
for 19 games. Hey! Edmund Cepeda was a Ranger. Hey! Yes.
Well, 19 games, yikes.
I believe 19, somewhere between 19 and 24. 19
forgettable games.
Emerson Edom was briefly a Ranger.
All right.
Yes.
Kenjamin.
I got two here, and I'm trying to figure out which one I want to do.
Give us the one that was a Ranger.
Let's see. Anson Carter.
Oh, was a Ranger. He was a Ranger.
Yeah. We didn't really bring our... None of us brought our A-game.
No.
None of us.
This is a day of infamy.
In we may be Ranger. Running out of Rangers.
Yeah.
That might be... Yeah. You know what? My buddy, who lives in Calgary, Jeff Hale, frequent listener, actually listens all the time. Actually, I call him Bubba.
Oh, hey, Bubba.
Because he's my buddy, Bubba. Anyways, he said we should do a theme one. Like, we should do, like, left wingers or, like, at the trade deadline, do different themes on was he a Ranger. So maybe we'll do that. Maybe we'll try that.
Ironically, I was reading an article today on some random, aggregator blog, and they had a post... 15 players you won't believe were Rangers.
What?
Yeah. No.
Have they been listening to all our podcasts?
I don't know. But
who was on there?
That's a thankless job.
What, Roman Hammerlick was on there?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to go Stefan Quintal. What did you guys...
Was a Ranger.
Oh, he was there.
Yeah, it was.
Still living in New York.
Yeah.
All right, everybody, thanks a lot for listening. Next week's a big one. It'll be playoff series previews, blow by blow, lots of arguments. We'll talk to you then.